Today is March 13th, and we are taping week 6, which is competition and cooperation in business, and we're making a segue into 7, which is socioeconomic welfare. I was going to eat some of that, but your students, your classmates told me they wouldn't be right. Also, I didn't wash myself.
I'm not washing my videos, so I won't go through that.
Okay, so notice that there is a reading that you're going to do for both of these from the same author, but two different books. It's Aaron Levine, Free Enterprise and Jewish Law, and Economic Public Policy and Jewish Law. Okay, so here is what the underlying theme of both of these weeks, all these readings are. The underlying theme is that as we climb our own personal ladder to success, there are other considerations we must make. So what does the halacha have to say about this? Okay. Am I doing something that, according to United States law, is perfectly fine, but according to the rules of Hasogas Gvul or other things of that sort, Mahavet v'Harara means someone else has dibs on something, whatever defines dibs, we'll see in a minute, and you claim that thing. Let's start with the one that I face all the time.
Well, can I make a sign on the sheet?
Yeah, please. Put today's date on it. Yeah. I face this all the time. I'm starting to back into a parking spot, and then someone stands there and says, I'm saving this for someone. Right? First of all, that happens to be illegal in New York City, that the cop sees you doing it in particular. Right? Or this happens to me all the time on West End Avenue. I'm driving down my block on the right side, right? And I see, hey, parking spot right in front of my house. And there's a guy waiting on the other side of West End to make an illegal U-turn because he says, hey, my blinker is on, I saw that spot first. Picture this, right? I'm here, ready to back into a spot, and there's a guy right across the street, facing the other way, right? Saying, I saw that spot first, I'm just waiting for the traffic on your side to go through so I can turn around and get it. Right? That's on the first page above Mitzia. Re'ia lo kanya. Seeing something does not acquire it. You have to be in possession. In possession of a parking spot is where you're in front of the spot and your blinker is on. But they don't see it that way. In New York, you can get killed over a parking spot. Right? So, the question is to what extent do we have to obey these laws when they conflict? For instance, there might be some intellectual property that United States law claims belongs to someone else, even though they're not holding it, they don't possess it, right? But the halacha would say that if not for the dina d'malchus adina, this is not considered gezel in Jewish law. So this is an easy answer to this. I'm sorry, you ask any rabbi here in this school or any place else, and they'll tell you that the law of the land is the law. Right? If they'll prosecute you for stealing these things or taking these things, right, from the internet, or you download something that's supposed to pay for, or the things like that are available, because I didn't steal it, someone else stole it. He's the one who put it down here for everybody to take. Right? I'll just tell you here, it's complicated. There are whole books written on where we use Dina Malchus Adina, where we sometimes may not use Dina Malchus Adina. The law of the land is the halacha. Okay. The laws of Hasogas Gvul, there is no such law in American law like this. That you can't open a pizza store on 91st Street because there's another pizza store on 89th Street. Right? No law in America like that. get make a better a bigger sale, make a better make a you know, do your best. America wants to drive down prices with competition, right? Now there are antitrust laws and there are monopoly laws. I'm sure you're familiar with some of these that you've probably studied now at King Sims. But the idea that we've been promulgating here, Hasaka School, we didn't have class on Thursday because we all went to hear the president speak. But I want you to be familiar with the terminology. Listen carefully to it. Nahafeich b'charara. Nahafeich b'charara. That was in your reading from the Encyclopedia Talmudit. Nahafeich b'charara is a very limited terminology that means someone has already taken dibs on something. Literally speaking, it's where you're shopping in a supermarket, and your charara literally means like a bagel or a roll, right, or cake. And you pick up this cake because you want to buy it. It's the last one in the store, right? You put down the cake for a second, and you look in your pocket to make sure you have enough money to cover. And then another person comes, and he... Mahafeich b'charara, you get it? He was hafifuch. He took it knowing that you very likely have dibs on it first. Right? If there are another five cakes right on the side, that's not no big deal. Right? A very common area where mahafeich b'charara emerges is in shidduchim. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to date more than one person at the same time. There just should be an expectation. Person thinks that the two of you are exclusive, then you would be violating the halacha by defying that expectation. How could someone draw such an expectation? Because you told them. Otherwise, there shouldn't be such an expectation. There's not necessarily such an expectation. Okay. So, but what's mehafeich b'charara and shidduchim is a case where you inquired about a particular person, right? You were already, I don't know, in my day, you used to walk up to this young fair damsel and said, would you like to go to a movie or something? You'd like to go to a cup of coffee? Can I take you out to dinner? Now, it depends where you're coming from, depends what circles you're in. But in some circles, it's like also until like the sixth date to actually make your own date. I mean, just things are getting a little crazy. Right, and you don't break up. If you don't want to go out again, you don't face this girl. You call up the shotgun and say, you tell her, I'm sorry, I just don't want people to go on anymore. It's crazy. The world is getting crazy. Right, but here's the point.
It wasn't like that.
If someone is set up with another person, and you find out, you know, someone just mentioned this family in Baltimore, and oh yeah, but you know what? Someone else already. Well, all's fair in this game. I want to break in. Right? I heard she's great. Right? That's called mahafeich b'charara.
Why?
Because she was already spoken for to another person, and as soon spoken for means someone else already called the shadchan and said, "You should."
That's not a loaf of bread. Like, it's a person making a decision.
I understand mahafeich b'charara is a loaf of bread. I know, but when someone already. Look at this, I called it dibs on something. But when someone, so here, the poskim say, just making a call, an inquiry, is not enough to be considered mahafeich b'charara. Okay?
Who says that?
Someone makes an inquiry and says, you know, that's how things go now. You get a name, you have to do your research, does he have a brother in jail, does he have a sister who did... So you do your inquiry, and then you say, okay, set it up, right? And then usually what happens, very often what happens is, especially you guys get a lot of, if you're dating this way, you get a stack high of names, right? And you choose between these names, you figure out which one, right? Plus the demographics favor you, right? In the Jewish community, every year, there are 2% more Jews than the year before, on average. Last 20 years.
Really? How does that make sense?
I'm having more children now.
I thought they were assimilating.
2% more.
2% more Jews. Now, what percent are staying Orthodox? What percent are re-involved in Shuvah? What percent are leaving Orthodox? That's possibly even more than that. But what you're saying is that if you're dating someone 5 years younger than you, right, you have a significant amount, a greater amount of a pool of people to date than she does if she's dating people 5 years older than her. Part of it in the Hasidic community is that the Rebbeim are saying you have to marry someone your age. Plus, there's a guy out in Los Angeles, I think, who said that $10,000 if you marry someone your age or older. For men. $10,000 if you marry someone your age or older.
$10,000
gift. No, it's a $10,000 gift at the wedding.
Oh, okay.
So that's $10,000 gift.
One
I think that's going to be a change. I'm just saying. They have, by the way, they have all kinds of caveats. You can't be dating at the time. It has to be a shidduch. It has to be someone else.
Come on. I've been out 5 times the entire time.
I don't know.
Have to see if you've heard of it, right? Something out of Los Angeles. So, because the shidduch crisis is enhanced upon, is added shidduch crisis for women because of this demographic. Plus, you have to factor in also that this is, at least in my community, significant because they all end up moving to the west side, is that every year, rabbinical council performs a few hundred conversions, and it's 90% women. So they're putting in all these additional, you know, it's enough that there are so many 30, 35-year-old single women in an infusion of, you know, of all these non-Jews. Only about 10% men are converting. And they're just much, much higher. I'm just saying, if they deserve to be converted and they've done all the proper work and they want bad to be Jewish, how are we to stop them? Okay, so I'm just giving you, I just want you to remember these two terminologies. Hasogas Gevul. Mahafech b'charara is just menschlich, that when someone else has certain dibs on something. The Gemara's example is a loaf of bread, right? Question is, to what extent does this loaf of bread example extend? Okay, yes.
Wait, so what did we say? I know mahafech b'charara, right?
So what did we say about shidduchim?
No. What do we say about Hasogas Gevul?
So let me give you some additional examples that appear in the Gemara. Okay, the Doraisa of Hasogas Gevul is on Gevul, on land.
How do you pronounce it?
Hasogat lahasig. This is so serious that. Are you familiar when the Ibn Israel entered the land of Israel, that shortly after entry, they went to two different mountains, Har Gerizim and Har Ebal? Are you familiar with this? And they declared 11 curses and 11 blessings. Are you familiar with this? Seven Perek and Seta Sota, there's a new bell here?
No.
All right? Okay. Parshas Kisavo, how about that?
Tochka.
Right? It's right before the Tochka. So in Sefer Yehoshua, they went to these two places. One of these 11 curses is Arur Masig Gvul Re'egu. So it's a big thing. Right? You're going to go on a mountain in Israel and convince them of these 11 things, not 10, but 11 things. And one of them is Arur Masig Gvul Re'egu. So my grandfather used to always start, as I remember as a kid, he had a shul in the Bronx. And he would start with a story right before Ne'ilah about two families who lived side by side. One family is here, the Hatfields, and here are the McCoys, right? And they lived in peace for hundreds of years, and they never bothered to have a demarcated line between the properties. But then all of a sudden, after many generations of living this way, they wanted to build a fence between the two properties because they didn't want to have such an open policy one to the other like this. So they looked for their deeds, and they looked for markers, they looked for anything, and they couldn't find any way to know where one land began and one land ended. The halacha would appear to be very simple in this case. Look for the disputed lines, right? Where are you sure the land began and ended? And then you split the difference. All right? That's a simple yachloku case where you have the disputed. I mean, this side is not claiming all of this side, right? This side claims, I remember when I was growing up, my grandfather told me that at that waterfalls, that's the end of our property, and it's right, fine. So they take the disputed area, they split it. Guys, come on, please. So they had this Din Torah. They brought in a rabbi. The answer should be very simple. Split it, right? Instead, the rabbi decides at the last minute to look around. Maybe, you know, sometimes for more land, you drive a stake into the ground that says, Ad Khan, until here is our property. He looked for such a thing. He started crawling all over the ground towards the middle of the properties to see if such a stake exists. Nada. Then he starts talking to the ground, and he says, Ground, to whom do you belong? My grandfather was saying this in Yiddish. He goes, Earth, to whom do you belong? And then he listens, puts his ear to the ground, and he starts rolling over and laughing. Right? And everyone thinks he's from Shogunah. And he said, Rebbe, what test are you making here? How are you determining what the land is? He goes, you know what? The land taught me something important. Now this is your Ne'ila message. I asked the ground who the ground belongs to, and the ground said, no. Those guys are so stupid, they're crazy. They all belong to me. I'm not theirs, they're mine. Because I'm going to eat them one day. Right? And they're worried here about, well, this little area, we're all going to succumb to a worm one day. Right? What's important now? Okay? So this is why the real Din D'Oraisa, Sogas Kabul, right, is not so easily just decided by just saying such a quick Yachloku. Right? Yachloku is a lazy man's answer. Which reminds me of another story about Shidduchim. There was a very unscrupulous Shadchan who took $10,000 from two different families to marry off the same boy. Right? And then she cut town. And each family wanted the boy. He was an excellent boy, right? But she took her fee, and then gone. So the two families had a Din Torah. This one said, no, it's mine. This one said, we had him first. And they went to a Din Torah. So the rabbi looks at the two women who are making their claims. He says, listen, I take out my Bav Metzia, I take out my Choshen Mishpat. It's very simple. We have to cut him in half. We give him half for him, for her daughter, and half for her daughter, and that's it. They will both live with him. So the first mother says, that's crazy. That's the sickest halacha I've ever heard in my life. Where does it say that? I'm not going to be any party to this. Let that woman have the boy for her daughter, and I'll cut para for the $10,000. The second woman says, no. If that's the halacha, that's the halacha. You cut him in half. Half for you, for your daughter, half for me, for my daughter. The rabbi looks at the second woman and says, give the girl to that woman for her daughter. She's the true mother-in-law. And the Shlomo.
This story sounds a lot like Shlomo's story.
I'm glad you're getting it. All right, so...
is that the going rate, $10,000?
No. The going rate for making a shit-up is $1,000. If you make a shit-up for a friend, both sides are supposed to give you $500. My daughter went out with someone about a year ago, and it didn't work for her, and she set up a friend. They don't have it.
She didn't make money?
I don't know. That's what you should do, God, by the way, guys. If you go out on a date and it doesn't work for you, try to think of a friend for whom it would work. Unless you want to throw a bomb for a revolutionary organization or something. But if it doesn't work for you and she's in the parsha for someone else, try to think. How many people here have never set up a friend? Never. How many of you have set up a friend?
Right here.
Okay. You made a shit-up?
Yeah. I didn't make a shit-up.
No, not made a shit-up, but you made a
shit-up. Set a relationship.
Okay. So most, do you have friends who are married here? Because
yeah.
Is anybody here married?
BK's pretty close.
Get close?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so. So that is midoraisa hasoka gvul is limited to actual gvul, okay. Now, so since hasoka gvul is doraisa, then have you guys learned enough about mitzia to know and know what hamas, know what takonas hashavim is, takonas hashavim? Have you heard of it? Yes. Explain it. Takonas Hashovim is that when someone steals something, they want to give him incentive. We want to give him incentive to do tshuva. We want to make it as easy as possible for him to do tshuva and get power for this aveira. Right? So what happens if I steal your wood and I make it into a shack? Right? You got it? So al pidin, the halacha is I have to give you your wood back. Right? Instead, the halacha allows me to just pay for the wood. You're going to say, wait a second. I got this wood from a very special place. It's not available anymore. I can't get it. I want that wood. I want my wood back. Right? I'm losing out here. You got it? So Tekonas HaShovim says that we allow him to just pay for the fair market value of that wood. How is this a Tekonas? Yes, explain.
Because the Chachamim felt that people wouldn't, the thieves would be willing to take for their entire house just to pay back, you know, like nails or wooden beams to the original owner. So in order to avoid that, my focus on this, so they said they could just pay back the town.
We call this like, we there's a word for this, right? In taxes, if you haven't paid your taxes for 5 years, or you haven't, they do this with illegal immigrants. You know what I'm talking about? No? If you haven't paid your taxes in 5 years, so they'll say, listen, just step forward and, you know, pay, we'll let you pay, let's say, 80 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar, right? So, in other words, that we don't...
Go to jail?
We don't go to jail, but because the government isn't capable of looking for them. They know their scofflaws, right? So they have a dispensation that if you step forward and save us the cost of prosecuting you, right, we'll let you step forward and pay even a little less. That's a real Tekonas HaShovim, right?
Well,
Tekonas HaShovim in the Gemara says he has to pay the full amount that he stole.
It wasn't an economic incentive, it was more like to create shalom.
Absolutely, it's all in part of the Gemara that at least Tekonas, shalom bias, and Tikkun HaOlam. But, guys, here's the point of why I'm saying this. There's no Tekonas HaShovim in Hasagas Gvul.
Come on.
If you steal land from someone, okay? If you steal land from someone, there's no Tekonas HaShovim on land. That land is mine, and there's another function of this. There's also no Onas Devarim on land. Let me explain. Onas and Karka in an exelus for the same reason. There's no Yehush on land. Is that, but Karka can still be stolen. You squat on someone's land. You're stealing their land. Right? But the Onoa, you familiar with Onoa is? Onoa means you can't overcharge. The laws of Onoa is the father of monopoly law, antitrust law, is that you're manipulating the marketplace to take advantage of a commodity that is that people will pay any amount for, and you're manipulating it to an end that takes advantage of the community's needs. So the Gemara says an amazing percentage. The share of Omna is just 1/6 markup. If you paid a dollar for this thing, you can only mark it up to $1.16. That is, who could do business on this level in New York? So the answer to this question is, because if you're paying such a high rent, and I want the convenience of going to, let's say, Seasons Marketplace for my kosher mozzarella cheese, so I don't have to go into Brooklyn for it, so I'm going to pay a good $3 more for a small package, because I agreed to pay for that convenience. Because his rent is so much more than the rent on Main Street or on 13th Avenue in Brooklyn. So that is what the Gemara calls a community agreement to release our rights regarding Onoa. Following? If you want to pay the extra amount for the convenience of having this product in your neighborhood, right? When I want to get a Yerushalmi art scroll quickly, And I have one in my community that he's paying this crazy rent. He's paying $20,000 a month for a small store, as opposed to you could pay for $6,000 a month on Main Street in Queens, but he's cornering a market here in New York. He figures for him it's sound to have the store, but then we also agree that I'll pay you an unusually high markup to get the convenience of having this Gemara. Amazon is obviously killing someone like this, right? Following what I'm saying? So, but be it as it may, Onoa is transferable. I can say I don't care if you're overcharging me. I want the convenience of having it near my house, right? Following? So this opens up a new vista in this section of the course, which is when it comes to Choshen Mishpat laws, you have a very broad leeway of how to deal with Choshen Mishpat, right? I give you for your own edification. Probably you're on the receiving end of this, but in the laws of inheritance, which is obviously a transference of money one to the other, there is a certain law of the Torah that there's a way to make an end run around this law, which is that the boys in the family are the only ones who inherit, and the oldest boy, if he's the Bechor, gets twice as much as the other boys. The girls are not inheriting from their parents. The girls are inheriting a ksuba from their husband. So this, by our standards today, is very unfair, right? How can you set it? The girls get by with the way our society is set up. The answer is that you make an end run around this Nechas HaShom. I don't mean to say we're violating the halacha, because you can't make any t'nai or any consideration that violates the Torah. The end run is that you put a little addendum to your will that says, 1 minute before I die, I am gifting all this money to my daughters and my other sons, who are not the firstborn. Found? So that it equals out. Without that addendum, then we'd be violating the halacha by having money go to the girls.
So all this doesn't get any double?
You can, but the thing is that you can, in a lifetime, anyone can give anything they want to their children on different proportions. But what automatically goes to the children after the parent dies has the rules I just mentioned. So just as we make an end run around Ona'a, by saying, as long as the community agrees to pay more than a sixth, it's okay. As long as I agree to get around this by giving my daughters money in my lifetime, right? Got it? Then this is fine. You with me? Okay. I move to Onoa because just as I said that there's no takonas shoving in land, there's also no Onoa in land. Can you figure why there's a gnaw in bracelets, in orange juice, in lounge chairs, in lawnmowers? Right? There is a gnaw. What's going on here? All right, so, but I appreciate you're just trying to be helpful. So there's no onah in karka because your land means so much to you that you're probably willing to pay more than the sixth markup, or you know what I'm saying? Land means different things to different people, so there's no onah in land. But let me get back to do this thing. I said that there's a lot of leeway in Choshen Mishpat, but there's no leeway in Yoredeya. There's one area of monetary transactions that's not, surprisingly, not in Choshen Mishpat, it's in Yoredeya from the laws of interest. Ribis, charging and paying interest, is like eating pork. You cannot agree to charge interest and agree to pay interest. Let's say I need the money so badly, just lend it to me. I'll be happy to give me $100. I just need it for today. I know I'm making $500 on this. I'll pay you back $120 next week. Right? We both agree he's willing to accept and I'm willing to pay. I'm more than happy to pay it. Right? Usser. There is the Gemara is so hates ribis that it says that even the two witnesses signing such a contract, the scribe writing the contract, anybody involved with a ribis transaction, it's actionable. You take back the ribis, the guy can take you to court. That's all right. So how can we get around this? What if people just don't want to, you know, the Torah says you have to loan money, right? What if the person who wants my money wants to make money on it? Why shouldn't I get a piece of that action? Okay, so what do?
You loan them the money as an investment.
Correct. It's all about what you call it. And I don't mean that this is an end run around the halacha, although I called it something else that just a few minutes ago. It's that I'm not calling this a loan, I'm calling it an investment, I'm not calling it interest, I'm calling it dividends, right? I'm just getting a piece of your action, that's all. Right? What do you think? Let me just ask a show of hands in this class. That's perfectly understandable if the person wants to borrow your $10,000 to invest in something where he's making money. Right? What if the person wants to borrow your money in order to afford an operation for a kidney that his son is going to die if he doesn't get, and he's borrowing $10,000 from five friends, and the friend says, I'm sorry, I can't lend you this money unless we sign this. Mutter or not? In other words, he's not borrowing this money to make money himself. He's borrowing this money to save his son's life. Can you charge interest on that? What's your feeling? Isn't that also an investment?
Yeah, you said you're investing in his son.
Investing in his son's future, no?
Yeah.
Okay, it's certainly not in the spirit of the allowance of a heter iska, but it is allowed. We don't want to close the doors before loaning, right? Obviously, if this guy can borrow money without such an iska, he would, right? I think one of our friends here was trying to help them in the building there. I just saw him running in and out there.
He
stole my
bed.
It could have been you, man.
Is he EMT?
He might be
there.
Could be here. Okay. So, I hope no one's hurt in there. Yes?
Yeah, so I think you're not allowed to charge interest, but like, yeah, borrowed $10,000. These are 10 years, just based off the present value of the money. It's completely different. If you think that $10,000 later, including on a ton of value, I'm allowed to at least charge them, like whatever the going rate on treasuries are, or something like that. All that
no, and you have to also be careful of a Shemitah year in between.
I didn't see what I'm saying.
Okay. No, you are allowed to loan money for...
It's definitely not loaning any money. That's a lot.
Now, Shemitah year is coming up about 4 or 5 years, but if you do lend money, there are loans for 10 years on this, and Shemitah does in Yishanim. But just write a proposal and cover that.
Okay.
Shemitah is the year where any all loans are canceled.
Yeah, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. All loans are just canceled?
Yeah.
We still do Shemitah Kesavim?
Yes, we do. Unless the person loaning the money wrote a proof book.
Okay.
In which case, you're not collecting the money, the bank is collecting the money for you, which makes it...
All right, I'm going to get a proof book.
Okay? All right, so now I just want to give, just as before we go, some Isurei Derabbanan. Okay? Some Isurei Derabbanan that you find in the Gaonim and the Rishonim of Hasagas Kabul. He says that when you probably at your age, do you know where Chas V'Shalom, if something would happen to you, where you would be buried?
Yeah.
He knows their family plot in your family.
My shul also had like a deal.
In Israel?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's my family. Okay.
It's all of like Manhattan has the same.
Most, I mean, a lot of families that I, this happens in my show all the time. It's not close to listen. My uncle just died. We don't have any place to bury him. Right, look, Avram's wife, Sarah, died. She was 127, for goodness sakes. He didn't have a place to bury her. He had to scramble afterwards. Right? Look, you get insurance. It's probably a good idea, but it's not for you to do. It's maybe for your parents to do it, maybe even your grandparents to do it. But life changes a lot, right? And you move to Israel, you move to another place, and right? So, but here's the thing. Once someone is set aside for a burial plot, the Rishon Bor has sort of vul to change that. It's a Drabbanan example of this. Okay. All right, so... okay. So here is another thing where Gaonim and Rishonim claim that there is a Hasagas Gvul with intellectual property of calling another person's opinion your own. Right? This happens a lot, I'm sure, in your papers and your assignments. You know, you copy or you take a... take something right out of Wikipedia, and all right, this is, you know, this is what you're going to do. And you call that your opinion. You probably get away with that maybe here in a course here, especially in Jewish studies. But out there in the world, there are people checking every single thing, every single mistake that you make that you call your own. And they're going to hold you on it, right? There is a... those are things called Hasagas Gvul. You've heard of George Harrison? Guitar for the Beatles. So right after they broke up, he wrote probably his best song, called My Sweet Lord, right? Some of the lines are coming close to Zara, but he was fleeced over this song. I think he had to pay $2 million because a few of the bars of the song sound just like a song from the early 60s called He's So Fine. If you heard the two songs, maybe let's play it right now and see. But the two songs sound somewhat similar for about 30 seconds. And for those 30 seconds, he has to pay, because the song made a huge amount of money. So he had to pay royalties because his song sounded a little like the other songs. Be careful, and it was a long court case, right? Right after he lost the court case, right?
Customers like, and something like that.
Someone judged.
It's crazy.
You know, you
also,
can say,
also, like the same four chords. You know those songs? Or you have like,
yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
So like, this is not. What is it? This is
still you want to play them both now and see?
Yeah, go for it.
One is called My Sweet Lord.
What's that one called?
The other one's called He's So Fine. He's so fine, like the Shirelles, maybe. I'm not sure. I'm singing that.
Yeah.
This is the by
okay.
He's So Fine by who?
The Chiffons?
The Chiffons? Maybe that's the Shirelles. Like you said that. What year does it take?
Yeah, this is older.
It's the 64?
60, yeah, 60, 63. 963
hits our class. I have money here. My school is like 71?
70.
70. This is right after they broke up. Does it sound familiar to everybody here? No, no one knows this song? When are you guys born? 96.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, now is the part that's going to sound like that.
That's
it, that's
nice. That's it. My sweet love.
What
is the
craziest?
That was too
good. I really want to see.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds really familiar. You heard enough. He lost $2 million because of this. And I assure you, George Harrison of Beatles fame probably never heard this song. Right? I don't know. Who's listening to the Chiffons?
Why?
I don't know. Maybe it's a black group. I don't mean to touch the show and say anything, correct. I don't know. I never saw them. But that coincidence caused a huge settlement. By the way, George Harrison, right after that, wrote a song called This Song. The song was about that anyone can use these lyrics or music if they want. Right? It was called This Song Was Made For You and Me. So, look, he didn't need the $2 million, but I could have used it. All right, so anyway, they will hold you responsible for anything you say. Guys, that resembles this. So when you quote something that you should know is out there, right? You could probably get away with it in this school. I don't know who's going to hold you to it in this school. But when you get out there and you start to present papers and you start to present reports and things like that, make sure that the hasogas to gvul that you remember this shir, right? Because there's a gvul, there's a boundary of intellectual property that if you claim is yours, and someone on your job knows that it belongs to someone else, they will hold you for it, and they'll come down hard on it. All right? Okay. So, that is, these are drabonan manifestations. Already Rabbeinu Hananel, one of the Gaonim, already in the Gaonim we have the concern, do not cite an opinion. I get this. Do not cite an opinion just to hook on a tall tree. If you cite an opinion, make sure that that is the opinion of that person who's talking. Right? I hope that's a bit of a question. All right. Anyway, so that's it. So make sure that when you if you're going to grab on to the property of intellectual position, an opinion, quote it precisely. All right? So that is finally some other drabbanan aspects of this. Okay, this is our segue into week 7. Okay? Yes?
On the PDF, it's section 6, is all Hebrew. Right?
Well, I just gave you, discussed that sacred gvul in different communities and how it relates to spiritual parameters. We did this. This was last class. Different communities means that if you open up a pizza store within 5 blocks of another one in Columbus, Ohio, you'll lose a Beis Din, that second one. But on Amsterdam Avenue, you won't. So different communities might have different parameters for that sacred gvul. If you open up a pizza store mamish across the street from another one on 13th Avenue in Borough Park, or an Avenue J in Flatbush, right? I'm sure the guy who's across the street isn't happy with that, but all right, there they'll say there's so many Jews to go around that it's good for the Jews to have this competitive spirit. I remember what happened before that second pizza store opened, right? The first guy was very upset, but by that time the pizza was so awful. And he was just taking advantage of the community, saying, I'm the only game in town, so I don't have to put any cheese on it. Take a little cardboard and throw a little something on it and throw a pizza, right? Competition, so the halacha is tasked with having a fair balance, protecting the store owner, protecting the consumer, protecting the entire community, right? And leaders of the community are also tasked with finding reasonable resolutions to these kind of things. I think I told you last class, it was so heartwarming that I actually discussed it from the pulpit on the Shabbos morning, that these two stores, 4 blocks from one another, having a very similar menu, that one agreed to be a very early morning venue, opening up like 5:36 in the morning for very early, you know, Manhattan people sometimes have to be, very early to go to a minion, and they want to have a breakfast at 6:30, 7 o'clock, and they have to go off into surgery or into Wall Street, right? So that one would do a very early morning, right? That was it. And then they would both compete for lunch. And then the Coffee Berry was owned by a person who wanted to close anyway at 6, 7, 8 o'clock. All right, they'll just stay open for maybe some late dinners and dates, but they'll close earlier, and the other one will stay open much later. Right? So they worked it out. Is it still working? I don't know. I'm just saying, but at least the halacha had something to say, and we injected into the discussion, into the community, that there are certain halachas that have something that tell you how to hold this situation. So what was quoted here? So this is where you go. You're all going into a world, and someone asks you, "What do you do for a living?" And the answer you should say is, "What I do for a living is I'm a good father and I'm a good husband. I am in business, so I can do that best job I can do for those things." And that you are guided at times not just by principle, but by halakhic principle. Okay. Recently, a balavas called me up and told me that she doesn't feel she's getting respect from her child. And she said, "Look what I did for that child. Don't I deserve better?" So I said, "It's not a question of what you deserve. Your child is commanded to respect you. And we're commanded, for goodness sakes. They're not suggestions, they're commandments. And you're in this school because you want to learn that. I take this seriously." All right? Okay, we'll close with that. And spiritual parameters, we've been discussing this now. Spiritual parameters, don't quote someone else if it's not, you know. All right? You could lose $2 million for just writing up two bars in the song that sound like the other one. Okay, guys. Let me close this. Who knows what they're going to say on